Hello and welcome to the Non-Breaking Space Show. Our guest for this episode is Val Head, who is a designer and consultant based in Pittsburgh, where she works with agencies and small businesses to make fun and effective websites. Christopher and Sam are your hosts for this episode. They talk with Val about education, learning to code, preprocessors, running a conference, and meetups in your community. Christopher Schmidt just finished wrapping up the online CSS Summit over at csssummit.com. And while you're waiting for him to come up with a new summit, be sure to pick up his latest book, Designing Web and Mobile Graphics, sold at dwmgbook.com or wherever fine and crazy illicit books are sold. Sam Capula is a design educator and designer in Austin, Texas, where she teaches responsive web design and typography at Texas State University. And of course, all this stuff is on our show notes at nonbreakingspace.tv. Our guest, Val Head, can be found on Twitter at VLH, and she blogs at valhead.com. Thanks for listening to our show. If you love it, we'd love it if you'd leave us a rating in iTunes, review, comment, concern. Christopher and Dave and myself all love each and every one of the comments, but especially the five-star ones. So enjoy the show.
Yeah, well, just our first question that we always ask is, first we'll like honor to have you here for the show and everything. And the first question that we always ask is like, how'd you get into web design? And I ask that just because like we're in this, you know, people just don't, you know, unless you're a student of Sam's, people don't really go to school like in my generation, my case, they go to school for web design. It usually become about in usually more often come in an indirect way of getting to web and so on. So.
Yeah. I mean, I guess. First, thanks for having me. It's pretty fun to do. And it's hard. You know, how I got into this is sort of weird. I used to think it was a really unique story, except I'm running into more and more people with almost the exact same story. So now I have a new theory about it. I was in a band in university. And, you need to do a bunch of promotional stuff for that. And one of the things we needed was a website. So, you know, one of us had to learn how to make websites because we had no money being students and musicians, right? And so I started doing it for that and, started making our site, ended up liking it enough that I started doing some for other bands. I also did a lot of photography for other bands. And then somehow managed to get my first job at a web design studio once I graduated, and was kind of amazed that you could get paid to do this.
So what band were you in? Like, what type of music do you guys play?
I was in a band. I guess the best way to describe it is like a pop punk band of sorts. It was like a 3-piece, kind of loud. We weren't like hugely famous or anything. We toured between like Chicago and Boston a few times and released a couple of things, but nothing crazy. I mean, it was definitely not going to be a full-time career, but it was so much fun. And, you know, it's what got me into this, and I've made some of the best friends I've had through doing that. So, it wasn't a waste of time, but it's definitely, I'm not a professional musician. We'll just leave it at that.
So what did you play, or what was your role in the band?
I was a singer and guitar player. So,
oh, nice.
Yeah, it was fun. It was a good time. It was a fun way to spend a few years. I'd totally do it again sometime. This is a little bit more, I guess it's easier to sit in front of a computer than like load up a van with equipment every day though.
Right. Yes, exactly.
I don't know if I've got that in me anymore.
Oh, no. I haven't. Do you mind if I ask what your name of your band was?
That particular band was Palomar Sky Survey, and I was also in a band called the Larkin Administration at the time, which was obnoxious and arty. It's awesome.
Oh, man. Did you ever like go back and just put your stuff on iTunes or?
You know what? I think some of the Larkin Administration stuff is, I think there was a couple of live shows that ended up on there. Mm-hmm. But it was just before the time where people were really sharing much music. It was, you needed a site to show where you were playing and to try to get booked. But we didn't really do too much as far as getting stuff, actual songs online. I know I found a couple a few years ago and I was amazed I could find them. I should look for them again. Though it might be embarrassing to listen to now.
So do you mind if I ask like what time period this was? Like was this like pre-MySpace?
No, MySpace was around. It was like early 2000s. So maybe, now I'm thinking about like, maybe we just missed the boat on the whole like internet song stuff. Yeah. I'm like, stuff was out there. We just apparently weren't paying attention. Yeah. Cool. Entirely possible. Yeah.
So like you just built a custom website and you just totally bypassed MySpace altogether. And
yeah.
So
it was just something that seemed really interesting to me. And I was like, this sounds like fun. Why not?
Yeah. So like you just built the whole thing from scratch, or did you just like, you know, just view source or just copy other bands' websites or
a lot of view source. I did know a couple of people who knew how to do it. So I would buy them beers and have them explain to me how you made like HTML.
Oh yeah.
So it wasn't like totally self-learning, but yeah, I guess back then like view source was kind of just how you figured out anything, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Pick apart someone else's work and try to build it back up in something that you wanted to do. And I'm sure it was a total mess.
Right. Cool.
My students think MySpace is the origin of web design, because when they come into the intro class, they're like, oh, just like MySpace. I'm like, yes, totally.
Kind of. But I guess, well, it's own little like kind of microcosm of the web design world, isn't it? I mean, you can do it. Is MySpace still exists, right?
Oh, yeah.
They just rebranded and are like, we did a new push of things recently.
Yeah,
but like, you could do anything you wanted on MySpace, right?
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, that's so. I guess, websites aren't really MySpace. Oh boy.
Yeah.
that's gonna be a fun first class when you're explaining that to them.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I knew it was weird when my local burrito shop had a MySpace page, and I was like, I don't think is that really. Are you guys a band? I don't think.
So. Yeah, and then it just kind of took off from, or whatever it is now. I'm not even sure what they're trying to be anymore.
Yeah. So you're a pop punk band, you're learning websites, developing websites, and then you just, you know, parlay that into I just use the word parlay.
That's fancy.
I know, man. Like, hey, I'll also do some swashbuckling at the end. So in your first web job, like your professional web job, mm-hmm. like what was that like?
I actually ended up with a really good first one looking back on it. It was a web design company who was just getting into building CMSs, or I guess they called them update engines at that place. Mm-hmm. Sounds fancier. So they had a whole secondary department that was where they had all their junior people. Mm-hmm. And you would basically have to update client sites that weren't built with these update engines that were built before that.
Mm-hmm.
So every project or every task was basically like, go into this thing that someone's already, you know, the guy down the hall built, and you have to add this button or add this text or, you know, design a new thing for it. So it was great because my job was basically to go ask the guy down the hall, you know, how he built it to begin with,
mm-hmm.
and then change it. So that was pretty good learning experience too. Cause honestly, I was so not qualified for that first job. I mean, I made a couple band sites, but I had no business being hired as a web designer those first couple of years.
Okay.
You know, you just kind of fake it till you make it, right? So right. It worked out great that my job was kind of, you know, I had to build upon things that were already there. So it wasn't like, if it was easy to cover up if I didn't know how to do something. So just be like, so what were you intending here? Really interesting. Oh, tables, I see. Okay. Yeah. So, but it was great because I got to do a little bit of everything and learn a ton on the job. So mm-hmm. it was a good first step.
So did you have to deal with nested tables, or were you beyond that at that point?
I think it was, I know that there were some sites that were pretty old that were table-based, and it was in a weird transition-y time because, you know, they were doing the whole CMS stuff. Of course, they were building their own, which is what everyone did in the early 2000s, I assume.
Right.
And they had some, you know, they were moving to CSS-based layout, but there's still some table-based layout. So it was kind of a good overview of all the things.
Mm.
You're like, oh, I have to learn how to do this way, but it'll never get done that way again. I see. And I'm pretty sure they still had, like, I think I remember still testing in Netscape or something. It was like, you know, this weird, weird time for web design.
Yeah, because I remember, like, 2000, like, we're all, like, trying to, like, get CSS to work for layouts.
So, which, I mean, I know I struggled with it a lot, but I was also just learning it. But I imagine that, like, it probably wasn't as easy as we're like, oh, then we just use CSS for layout and everything was perfect. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think that's really how it went.
Yeah.
But it was definitely an interesting time to be doing this.
Right. Sam, so do you teach your students right out of the box, like CSS layouts, or do you guys go back in time and just do nested table layouts?
Oh no, I don't even show them anything table related unless they're making a website for a bank that needs cells of some sort, Yeah. No tables.
Okay, man.
It's interesting.
I'll show them the Space Jam website though.
The Space Jam.
Have you seen the Space Jam website?
No, I've not seen the Space.
Oh, it's amazing. Oh. If, Warner Brothers has kept it alive.
Oh, the Space Jam. Yeah, yeah, of course, man. Yeah.
So
yeah.
Oh, so it's like retro internet that's still on the internet?
Yes.
Oh, that's amazing.
Well, it contains a little bit of Michael Jordan's greatness, so you must preserve it. That's all cost. So.
The You've Got Mail website is also up, and that one's in Flash. If you're a Meg Ryan, Tom Hanks fan.
Oh, yeah. Well, I also remember like Zeldman did Batman Returns, I think. Or Batman, yeah. Or the second Batman movie or something like that from Tim Burton or something like that. And that was in that, that was his like his thing with Warner Brothers. I remember him doing that. And I'm pretty sure that one's sticking down. I may be wrong on that one, but I remember that was like late 90s or something like that. So that was kind of, or mid 90s. I don't know. But yeah, it's classic websites.
I hope someone has like a catalog of like classic websites that are still available, like live. I would love to go through that some afternoon. It sounds like a fun afternoon of interneting.
I don't know about that. But
you're like, oh man, we used to do that. Oh, it's terrible.
Yeah. Oh man. So you're updating websites, you're learning all this stuff, and then do you stay with the job or do you go on or do you like what's the next step like?
I ended up leaving that job probably earlier than I would have wanted to, just for visa issues. And then I ended up doing a few years in e-learning, which was also very interesting because, you know, e-learning is very different than just regular web design. And you've, like, totally different user goals and everything. And I think that's where I first realized, like, holy crap, people are trying to use this stuff. Maybe we should design for that, you know, as opposed to just like, let's make it awesome and just, you know, whatever is the latest trend. It was kind of like a wake up call for like, oh God, people need to actually get something done. I see.
Oh, you said visa issue?
Yeah. I'm Canadian, so I had to have a work visa to be in the States for a little bit. So that ran out.
Oh, okay.
Then I moved back home to Toronto and was there for a few years. So okay. Yeah. Okay. It's probably good though, because that place was a good web design company, but it was also like, you know, that was also the time where everyone was buying web design companies, so they got bought, and it was probably a good time to leave.
Oh, yeah.
You know, once the huge corporate people come in, I don't think it was going to be quite the same place anymore.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to maintain the culture.
Yeah.
After someone gets buys. All right, cool. So Canadian, that's awesome. Mm-hmm. So, and then visa issues, and then... So e-learning, what about e-learning? Like, what were you doing there? Like, you say you're e-learning, but I'm not really sure what that means.
Well, it's basically a university was like, hey, we've heard this e-learning thing is cool, and we're going to hire a bunch of young kids because they don't cost much to basically develop our entire e-learning system. So it was a really cool challenge because we were like, you know, you're like a few years out of school, you're just like, yeah, awesome challenge, let's build this thing. And we sort of had no idea what we were doing and just kind of, you know, built things as we went along. But it was a really fun challenge to do and just being that, you know, we had to design everything. They had an e-learning system they were using, so we didn't have to do any back-end stuff. But it was just a small team of us trying to figure out, like, how to make e-learning good. And somehow someone at the university thought that was a good idea. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I think it worked out pretty good. We managed to... the student feedback we got was pretty good, so it worked out. But it was I think that was early e-learning-ish. I'm not really sure when e-learning became a thing, but it was the first I'd ever heard of it. So to me, it was just like, wow, people take classes online? Amazing.
Yeah, it's I was 2000, 2001, I started my teaching online for the first time. So, and I did that for like a decade.
Yeah.
So, but I know like my alma mater was like gearing up for it's huge. I mean, and also like, I mean, I guess in some ways Environments for Humans is e-learning.
Yeah. I mean, you guys use Connect, which is often used for e-learning stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just it's a different, slightly less stuffy flavor of it.
Yeah. So we're doing like, and then I work for a system, our school that our company that does, what they use Angel.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure that's what you used or or whatnot. What did you?
I think it was Intralert or Blackboard, something like that.
Oh yeah, Blackboard.
Blackboard's been, I mean, Blackboard's been around forever, so it's probably that.
Yeah. Yeah, Blackboard I used because I was a TA for Interactive, and I had to teach classes, and I used Blackboard for that. They actually make every student use Blackboard to teach their grades. So Sam, like, what do you, I mean, do your students have to use some online?
Yeah, they have to use something that's pretty much exactly like Blackboard, but it's called Sakai, or the Bobcat, TechState Bobcat version of it is called Trax. And it's really cheesy. Everything here is named after cats somehow, which that's is awesome at the same time. And when I was in grad school here, though, we tried, the MFA program was completely online because it was nights and weekends. And then anything during the week, you used AIM Chat. Mm-hmm. And you used Adobe Connect every once in a while, and then as many people who could get on Skype behind one computer as possible. So it worked out well.
Yeah. It's funny how, like, for online learning stuff, it's just like kind of hacking together every possible channel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's the man, like, so much duct tape. It's not like that.
Well, there's no
I haven't tried Ustream. Well. Oh, sorry. Have you guys used Ustream at all? It's like a live stream, and you can record it from your phone or iPad or anything, and it just records everything in front of you. You send somebody a link, they can see it as it's happening.
No, I know some people. I've seen some colleges use it for like commencement streaming. Mm-hmm. So like if relatives can't see a commencement celebration for their relatives or. They put on, I saw that happen once, but I haven't, video is really hard for me to get a grasp around because I feel like that's where everything's going now. So, but I haven't used Ustream for much because, can you just like broadcast, like you just like do a webcam and you just like shoot it out to people? And
yep, pretty much. I mean, I sent my parents a link. My parents live outside of the country, so I just sent them a link for my MFA graduation and had my iPhone broadcast every single moment of it. So as I'm walking up to the university president getting my degree, they're seeing me shake her hand and they see me walk on by and trip over myself, all that.
That's amazing though. That, I mean, the internet's like practically magic when you can do stuff like that.
Yeah. And it's a lot cheaper than two people flying in from out of the country. So
yeah. Like, pay for a little extra bandwidth so you can actually, you know, get the video in proper speed.
Right.
Cool. Yeah. So I haven't done Ustream that much, but yeah, it didn't. Then also like Google Hangouts are popular now, and I don't know, it's newfangled stuff. Like
I'm noticing a lot of the Google Hangout stuff also being used in like CNN interviews or anything.
Yeah.
You know, NPR, anything like that. You hear the little sounds that Google Hangouts or Skype make, and I love that you can hear that now in a lot of these conversations.
You're like, I know what you're using. I know that Skype sound.
Yeah. And you look around at all of your devices and think that somebody's calling you, but it's just what you're listening to.
Yeah, that's more what happens. You're like, oh, I'm getting oh, never mind. That's just the TV show. Or when someone gets a text message in a movie or something, I hate that.
Right.
Ugh. Like, oh, it's my phone. No, it's not.
Well, also, like, they Skyped in someone for the Zimmerman trial. And they exposed.
They showed his name.
His name, and so people were like trying to call him in the middle of the thing.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah, and so I think they went back to the old school like conference call after that. It was just,
what do you do in that scenario? Do you put your right hand over your mouse and pledge that you're not to lie?
I don't know.
Supply your own Bible.
It's just like, did you get the FedEx Bible that we sent you? Okay.
Do you have your Bible ebook?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it's an iPad. You just put your hand on it.
Like, I swear, there's a copy of the Bible on it, really.
Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah, so, okay, cool. So, yeah, so there's e-learning, and then, so you're teaching courses?
Oh, no, just designing them and working with the teachers to figure out, you know, how to put, because all those, I guess, what would they be, learning management systems, LMSs, they let you design things to a certain extent, and then also designing sites to promote their e-learning classes, that kind of thing. So still just the web design stuff. I got into some teaching later on, but that was really just building everything around it. And it was for a nursing school too, so I would have had no business teaching that. But like, nurses do stuff. Darn.
Yeah. And then how long were you helping build e-learning sites?
Only about 2 or 3 years. It was a pretty short grant. I mean, I guess that seems kind of long as far as career stuff goes for us, but for them, they're like, oh, it's only a 2-year grant. I'm really sorry.
Yeah. For colleges, that's like, I think that's pretty typical.
So. Yeah. And I was like, 2 years? Awesome. Yeah. Sounds great to me. Yeah. So, yeah. And then I started working in more traditional agency stuff again. So, yeah, that was the kind of e-learning tangent of my career, but it was a pretty fun one.
Okay. So do you think you went from Toronto back to the States or?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I moved back about 10 years ago. So.
Okay.
So yeah, I've been here for a while now. Now I'm in Pittsburgh doing my own thing. So.
Okay. Cool. So, and then just doing your own thing. Have you been contracting since then?
Yeah, just freelance and consulting and then a lot of teaching workshops and that kind of thing, mm-hmm. Which I find really fun. I love getting in a room with a bunch of people and just like, let's talk about doing some really fun stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, well, I've been doing a lot on CSS animations and just, you know, dealing with CSS creatively and less so of a thing that we use to decorate a fancy piece of paper on the screen, essentially, and, you know, making it do more stuff. And also teaching a lot of code for designers type classes with JavaScript or processing and that kind of thing. Because okay. I think that's a fun one to teach as well.
Yeah. So is that mostly what you do? Is this workshops now or?
It varies. Like right now I'm doing pretty much all client work, but you know, a month ago I was doing pretty much all workshops. So it kind of depends on the time.
Right.
I think July is a pretty sad time for workshops. Everyone's on vacation.
Right. Yeah. So. Yeah, we realized like we did an event this year or something, and it was just like we were wondering why no one really showed up, and they realized like, oh wait, everyone's on spring break.
Oh no! <It's like laughs> yeah, because if you're not actually in school, you never think of when spring break is. It doesn't exist.
Yeah, like what's going on? Spring break? What's going on? So CSS animations and stuff. Mm-hmm. So what do you usually teach in a workshop like that?
We teach a lot of stuff about, we'll start off with the kind of the basics of how animations work and the syntax of it, because I feel like it's very different than your traditional CSS syntax as well. And just getting the idea around, or you're getting your head around the idea of like, you're making things move and there's this time component, or, you know, for 3D transforms, now there's this like extra axis, and you suddenly got 3 dimensions as opposed to just 2. So I think getting your head around that and the syntax involved can be an interesting challenge.
Right.
But it's, you know, when you have everyone in the room, it's much easier than just trying to read some of this stuff. Because some of the specs, I'm not really sure who comes up with the syntax, but I kind of wonder about them. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we deal with it. And then we work on, you know, doing some fun animations. We usually do something silly like making a robot dance or something and just trying to group them together and kind of compound them on top of each other. And then we get into some more, you know, of working with kind of animated interfaces, or I guess the hipster buzzword for it now is transitional UIs, of just, you know, what happens when you start making your interface move, what changes, you know, how can that make things better? How can it make it worse? How do you judge when you've done something that, you know, is effective and fun as opposed to like annoying? So a lot of that kind of stuff too.
Transitional UIs. Like, can you explain more about that? Cause apparently I haven't gotten the hipster, email blast yet. So.
Yeah. Well, it's basically just, you know, UIs that are in motion. And I notice it a lot when it comes to, you know, a lot of the apps we use on our iPhone and our iPad or, you know, whatever other ones, but everyone always uses those as the example. We have, you know, it's not uncommon for those interfaces to kind of have a 3D element to them or to actually, you know, have movement to them. And on the web, traditionally, that hasn't really been the case, right? Like your basic website generally doesn't have anything moving around. It's like click, go to next page. So it's this whole level of stuff we can, now with CSS being able to do animations, you know, we have this lower level ability to actually add these little bits of, you know, intriguing, delightful things, or, you know, these design details that we couldn't do before that just bring it up to that sophistication level that people are used to seeing in apps. And now we can do on like any basic web page. And, you know, you don't have to pull in a bunch of JavaScript or Flash or anything. It's just, you know, CSS and usually a little JavaScript if you want much logic, because, you know, CSS isn't a programming language, but, you know, the barrier to barrier to entry to make that happen now is so low. It's just like we have this huge amount of power on with these tools that we've been using for years, and it's kind of like this whole new light for them. Mm-hmm. I love that part of it.
Animations are mm-hmm. more, you bring more complexity into it, especially if you like the 3D stuff is, I feel like I have to sit down a whole day to like learn it and then I forget it the next day. So how do you use like SAS when you do your workshop, like in order to like to generate all that code easier, or do you just use CSS, vanilla CSS for your workshops, or?
I've been using vanilla CSS just because I know not everybody is in on the whole SAS thing yet, but more and more I'm kind of thinking maybe I should start because it's a heck of a lot easier, but I would just hate to have someone come in and be like, oh man, I have to learn SAS and animations. Oh crap, I'm so far behind everyone else.
Yeah.
So I've been doing vanilla CSS and a lot of it with CodePens. That way, you know, prefix-free is installed, so at least we don't have to do prefixes, which is a huge help. But yeah, that's a tough call. I'm kind of I'm always reconsidering that every time I run a workshop. I'm like, should I go with the SAS stuff? Because that's what I actually use, and it saves me a ton of time. But you don't have to know SAS to do this,
right? Yeah.
And as much, I mean, those of us that use preprocessors, I think assume everyone does, but
no.
There's a lot of people still that don't, and you know, some people they don't feel it helps their workflow at all, and that's totally their call.
Right.
So. Yeah. Yeah, it's tough though. You got this kind of like branching of CSS, right? Like, do you use this or not? Oh, geez. Yeah.
Oh man, this is the first time I've heard vanilla CSS used as a term. Because I know people use vanilla JS, but I don't really like the term vanilla anything, because like vanilla that XYZ, because it's just like, I think I mentioned this in previous podcasts, but it's like vanilla JavaScript just means like JavaScript, right? and using the term vanilla just makes me want ice cream. And that is just. And if I can't have ice cream, that just
I can go for some dessert now that you've been talking about it.
Yeah, I know. Just, yeah. Oh, man.
I'm not sure enough to call it just like plain CSS. Just CSS.
Yeah.
Plain old boring. Yeah. No style CSS. I don't know.
No style CSS. We just write properties here.
No classes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, I wonder if there's going to be like a CSS purist movement like that that's going to come out of all this preprocessor stuff. They're like, we're like basically super unpreprocessing.
Oh, man.
I don't know. That's silly. Ignore that.
I'm just imagining it now.
Like selectors only, no classes, no nothing. I don't know. There'd probably be only a certain like what they would consider the bare bones of CSS. Mm. Anyways.
But so
back to ice cream.
Back to transitional UIs. Mm-hmm. So are you looking at, I think Aaron Gustafson and Brad Frost talked about like web components and mm-hmm. like last night or yesterday or whatever.
Interface inventories.
Inventory. Yeah. Like, do you have something like that where you just like, you have a demo and you just like start building like, you know, 3D animated UIs and just, it's just like, hey, let's just recreate this and see how it goes and stuff like that.
I'm usually not like a huge library, but I try to keep it like kind of project specific because usually we only have one day. So
right.
I try not to like totally overwhelm people and you want to have a little bit of fun while doing it. So usually we build up one or two things and just kind of, just a couple of things, not a huge library of stuff. That'd probably be a bit too much.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Though if anyone wants to do like a few days of just animating interfaces, I would totally be into that.
Right.
So far, I haven't convinced anyone yet.
That'd be awesome just to do like an Iron Man mask, you know, with Robert Downey Jr. is like floating around and you get the helmet view. Just like, okay, let's just end with this menu here.
Okay. It's interesting because doing all this stuff with CSS, you know, if you're really used to CSS and you've been doing it as kind of the like, you know, marking up or styling up a page that's static, it's very different to think of it as having this animated quality to it or having that ability. But then on the other hand, if you've done a lot of JavaScript or Flash or whatever else, and you're used to making stuff animate with script, it's very different to do it with CSS too. So there's people coming at it from different angles. And I think they all get something a little different out of it.
Right. Yeah. And then, so you just do animation workshops and also transitional UIs. But then also, I think, you know, for the CSS Summit, you're going to be bringing, talking about animated infographics.
So. Yes, basically taking that and applying it to some infographic stuff, because infographics are pretty fun.
Mm-hmm.
We'll just be applying that to like some, I guess like graphs and charts, but not as boring as that sounds. But I don't know what else to call them, because essentially they are graphs and charts still, right? Like, no matter how awesome we make them look, they're still technically, you know, graphs and charts. Right. No wonder people never call it that. Jeez.
Yeah, because like actually, like I'm in a co-working place, and we have like a lot of incubators and accelerators,
accelerometers.
People just want to know how what their Y and X axis are at all times, and maybe their Z axis too. So this company actually installed like a double decker HD monitor system of a Gecko board, which. I'm not sure you know what a Gecko board is or whatnot, but basically it's a
dashboard of stuff.
Yeah, it's a dashboard, pretty much like a Gecko board. But like, so they have widgets of like almost everything that they have, like GitHub commits, pools, stock price of something or other, like RSS feed and stuff like that. So then you just like push it up there, and I was just so captivated by it that I went to the App Store for iPad, and the people who do Panic Software, they actually have an app for iPad called just Status Board, right?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, and so you actually make your own widgets and stuff like that. They have a few custom widgets and stuff like that. So, I'm captivated by it now. So we have one for E4H, and we just know what's going on. And they're like kind of, I think it's called like ambient information or ambient findability or something like that. I forgot what it's called, but someone wrote a book about it for O'Reilly a while back. And so, but I like it just because you just put it in the corner or put it on the TV screen or whatever, and you just glance up and you just see what's happening. You know, you don't really like, you know, seek out information. And so it's, and a whole bunch of infographics, get line charts and stuff like that, and all that stuff like that. But I like it because it updates itself automatically, which is like, you know, infographics is just, you can think of it as a kind of static, like you see people like, you know, posting infographics on Facebook or in the blog post or Tumblrs or whatever. But I really like, you know, doing it with CSS and HTML and maybe integrating with JavaScript, that you can just update these graphics automatically. It's like a refresh.
Some live data in there.
Yeah. So that's what I'm really looking forward to. Like, you know, I'm not expecting you to do that for your talk, which you said something, but yeah, just show people like, hey, this is, we can actually do these cool things with CSS and HTML, and you know, maybe tie it into some backend stuff like that.
It's the possibilities are kind of like, you know, pretty much endless these days of anything you want to make, right? Like before, it used to be like, oh, I want this to be an animated thingy. I want this to, my, you know, status board to have animated charts, and you're like, well, kind of got to use Flash. You have no choice. But now it's like, well, you could do that, but you probably won't. You could just use CSS with a little JavaScript. You could do it in all JavaScript. You could do it like, there's, you have an endless list almost of how to get stuff done now.
Yeah.
I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I think so too. But yeah, so I totally had this nerd envy about Gecko boards and stuff like that. So now I'm just like, hey, iPad, you have a big HD TV. I have a...
You're like, I have this little one, but it still counts.
Yes. Okay. So, and then you work on organizing Refresh Pittsburgh, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess my side work is organizing Refresh Pittsburgh and Web Design Day. So doing like a bi-monthly meetup, and then also, you know, a yearly conference as well. You know, this stuff doesn't take much time or anything.
No. So just for people who don't know, like, what's the Refresh and what's Refresh Pittsburgh?
Well, Refresh is, I think it's I used to say it was a national kind of umbrella, but apparently it's international. So that's awesome. And it's basically just a loose network of, you know, groups that get together and talk about web design. Some of them more regularly than others. We are moving to a monthly format, actually, where we're alternating, you know, kind of more general talks with more very focused code talks. Like tonight is our first code talk night. And then, you know, in August, we're having a regular meeting where we're going to be talking more about, you know, there won't be a bunch of code on screen, basically.
Right.
Because not everyone's into that, strangely enough.
Yeah.
So we're doing a lot of that. And the community here is just great. So it's really wonderful to be able to have that much going on. And we're not the only meetup in town either. So it's great.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I was happy to, fortunate to like speak at Refresh Pittsburgh.
Yeah. You were here in June.
Yeah. I was there in June. And you were not.
No, me and Brad were like, oh, we're getting out of town.
Yeah.
We were both teaching workshops somewhere else. So we're like, darn.
Yeah. So it was, what was it? Like, it was Brad's idea like to do it. And then like, yeah. You guys are gone. I'm like, oh man.
Yeah, Brad was like, it's Brad Frost we're talking about. He was like, yeah, you should come down and do a Refresh Pittsburgh talk. Do it. And then you were like, I can do this day. And he's like, not going to be there. And I was like, oh, neither am I. Ouch. So everyone who was there loved it though. They said it was a great night. I was kind of, I'm always sad when I have to miss Refresh stuff, but.
Oh yeah. Well, like, your partner, Jason, like he like did a great, I thought it was just gonna be me, but then like he had all these like, great speakers come out as well to do like speak as well. And then you had me.
Yeah. We usually do at least two. The way Jason likes to say it, he says he likes to set it up like a punk rock show where you have like an opener and a headliner. So we always have at least two.
Yeah.
First one's usually shorter than the second one. And it seems to be a good format. It's like just enough that, you know, it's tough to pick one topic you can get everyone to come out with when you have two and one of them short.
Right.
It's good for getting people to speak and getting people to come out because some people are intimidated by doing like an hour long talk, but you're like, hey, talk for 20 minutes or 10 minutes. And they're like, cool, I can do that.
Yeah.
So it's good. It's nice to be flexible.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a really good night and good crowd and stuff like that. So, I know Refresh Austin does the same, like they double up every time. And, recently they kind of diverted, but like in the past they usually do one like developer talk and one designer talk.
Yeah.
And that usually is a good like combo to get everyone out there. So but yeah, cool. And then so how did you start doing your conference? Like what's the name of it again? And like how was just like running meetups like just kind of like fall into doing
Sort of. I mean, it's called Web Design Day, and this is actually our fifth year, crazily enough. And basically, we moved to Pittsburgh about 6 years ago and really realized it's much more vibrant community now, but we moved here and we were like, you know, there's actually a pretty big community here in Pittsburgh, and they don't seem to realize what they have. You know what I mean? Like, everyone's like, oh man, we're just from Pittsburgh, whatever. And you're like, no, this community is awesome. And so one day over beers, somebody said, we should have a conference here. And I was like, hell yes, I'm going to do it. And that's kind of how that started. So I did it. I actually started with a different conference. It was a Flash conference, actually, because I always really liked the way Flash conferences were this great mix of like digital art, web design kind of stuff, and like the practical and then like the way out there stuff. Mm-hmm. So we did that. So my first conference ever was a 2-track, 300 plus person work a conference in a hotel, which is just like, don't start with that. It was so stressful and crazy, but you know, we pulled it off. So we kept doing them. And Web Design Day is a 1 day, 1-track conference on web design. It's our fifth year. And this year we're actually adding workshops the second day. So it's maybe the name is now misleading. We should probably call it Web Design Days. But you know what? If we knew 5 years ago we were still doing this, we probably would have thought of a better name.
Yeah.
I always feel like such a jerk explaining Web Design Day to like non-web design people.
Yeah.
Because they're like, oh, Web Design Day, what do you do? And my default explanation is always like, well, it's a day where we talk about web design for the day. And I'm like, oh man, I sound like such a jerk. But that's what it is.
It does what it says on the label.
Yeah.
Or every day should just be Web Design Day.
Yeah. You know, yeah, that's true. So now we get like about around 300 people out for that. So
nice.
Started as just like after the huge one, we decided to start the second conference a little small. Mm-hmm. So it started out, I think, with like 80 people on a Saturday 4 or 5 years ago. And now it's like last year it was over 250 people in like a proper theater. So it keeps growing.
Cool. Awesome. Yeah, and then that's in October, right?
Mm-hmm. October 25th here in Pittsburgh. So,
okay,
if you haven't been to Pittsburgh, it's totally worth checking out.
Cool, awesome. And then let's see. Oh, then also, so you mentioned like Flash, right? And mm-hmm. the mixture of a Flash conference, and which I've never been to a Flash conference, and I at this rate probably never will.
Probably never will.
Oh, yeah. And so you talk about the mixture of like artists and tech people and stuff like that. Do you see like processing, which is like I guess a visual design language in its own right, I guess, sort of like that, like coming out of that type of?
I think so in a way. I mean, probably the closest thing to the way Flash conferences were as far as a mix of like just really cool art design and also like information design is the I.O. Festival, mm-hmm. which is a really great one run by Dave Schroeder and some other people out in Minneapolis every June. And there's a lot of processing people there, a lot of open frameworks people there, a lot of really great data visualization stuff, and just a really awesome mix of like practical things and then just amazingly artistic things and, you know, just that whole gamut. But I think processing, I mean, it's been around since before Flash, and I think people are getting into it more, maybe kind of making that move, but it's just, it's not as web ready as Flash was. So I think that's kind of a tough part for some people. Mm. You know, there's processing JS, but that's not really processing. It's kind of like, I mean, it's amazing on its own. It kind of takes processing sketches and converts them-ish. Mm-hmm. This is a very inaccurate overview to like JavaScript, which is pretty darn cool. But then it's also like, well, then why not just write that stuff in JavaScript if you know JavaScript already? Mm-hmm. So it's awesome, but also not like the solution for everything.
Well, how is it not the solution for everything? Hmm? Well, how is it not the solution for everything?
Well, I teach a lot of processing workshops, and I teach some JavaScript workshops as well. Maybe this is a weird example, but I would never teach a processing JS workshop because I feel like if you know processing and you want to get your stuff on the web, processing JS is perfect. Mm-hmm. But if you know neither JavaScript nor processing and you want to make things for the browser, you should just learn JavaScript.
Okay.
You know, just go right to the source.
Okay.
But processing JS is awesome for getting a lot of processing work online because, you know, it basically by default exports a Java applet, which like, what are you going to do with that these days? Mm. You know, well, people use it for installations and stuff. That's awesome. But getting it online has always been a sticking point for processing. So with processing JS, it's much less so a problem.
Right.
And it's wonderful for that. But, you know, it's not its own language or anything really in that sense.
Right.
Hopefully I haven't just totally insulted all the processing JS people.
All the fan mail we get, we're great right to you.
Okay. No, there seems to be a big trend for that, right? Like even like Coffee Crisp, oh goodness. Coffee. See, you start talking about dessert now and talking about chocolate bars. Coffee Script. You know, that's kind of like writing JavaScript without writing JavaScript. You know, like I feel like that's kind of a trend lately is to have these like languages on top of languages.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not totally sure if I'm very into them.
Yeah. So like, because you do a processing mm-hmm. JS workshop, right? So
just processing.
Just processing.
Yeah. Okay. And separately JavaScript workshops. So it's very confusing.
Yes. Like, oh man, I'm totally confused right now. Okay. So to processing workshop. So what do you teach with that? Like what should people know to get started with processing?
For the processing classes, I've taught them a lot at the Hackerspace in town. So a lot of people coming to that are artists who have no idea how to do any programming at all. They're like brand new to the idea of programming, and they really want to start creating like digital art or, you know, some sort of physical thing because processing hooks into Arduinos very easily, or that's often paired up. Mm-hmm. So they're interested in making physical things or making screen-based artwork or making software as art. And I usually do the intro classes where it's just like programming for complete beginners from that artists who want to use processing standpoint. And that's pretty fun to do. And I've also done one where that was a little bit crazy, or that is a little bit crazy, where we get a bunch of people together in the morning and we learn how to make generative art with code and processing. Mm-hmm. And then we take a lunch break and we go to a silkscreen studio and print what we just created on screen as a 2-color art print. Oh, so cool. Basically, while we eat lunch, the print shop makes our screens. It's great.
That's awesome.
It's a really fun day, but it's also very ambitious because you go from nothing at 9 a.m. on Saturday, and by 5 p.m. you've got like a short series of art print of art prints that you made yourself.
It's very awesome. Cool. And I wish I could go to that one. So because I feel like I feel like it's pretty awesome way to.
I want to do that one a ton more. So if anyone's got, you know, venues for that. The hard part is finding a place to print, but
mm-hmm.
I would love to just do that constantly. It's so much fun to see what people come up with.
Right. Yeah. I mean, like you do like prints, but you also do like, you know, exports other things too. So.
Oh yeah. The same process not the printing process itself, but the exporting process, you can do that to like digital printing as well. But the silkscreen is just a fun combination of like hands-on, like you have ink all over yourself versus in the morning you were just typing on a keyboard, you know, like making arrays and drawing shapes. So it's kind of taking that to the extreme.
Yeah. Cool. Well, what are you excited? I mean, you do a lot of things like processing the animation, some of that, and client work and stuff like that. What are you, I mean, I guess we talk about like frameworks a little bit, but because like you say, like frameworks on top of languages, if you will. Like,
yeah.
Like, I mean, like there's CoffeeScript, which, you know, people like, people don't like, whatever. And then there's like Haml, right? Mm-hmm. Which I'm like, what the?
I'm not really sure what Haml is, to be honest.
Yeah, people seem to like it. Like there's people who really like it, but I tried it and I just like, I didn't, I was just, I guess I've known HTML for so long that it's so much easier for me to write HTML.
Yeah. There's certain things just become ingrained in your brain, right?
Yeah.
I'm like, it just comes out.
Like, so you don't want me to write a class name right here inside the tag. You want me to like return, I don't know, whatever. So it's like return edit and like this, and it automatically generates all these divs for me. And I'm like, well, that's cool, but I really don't want to change over my whole entire coding, HTML coding to Haml just so I can get like automatic generated divs and clicking tags. Especially when there's like, I mean, when we kind of like, which is totally like a bad comparison, but to go to like SAS and say like, we'll give you variables like in your CSS, like, well, I'm totally down with that. You know, I'm just, that makes sense because that I have a lot of colors I want to reuse over and over again. And it'd be nice to do some for loops in SAS and CSS and all that. Whereas HTML, I'm like, well, we could use like JavaScript to manipulate the HTML if we wanted to. We could use, you know, backend code and manipulate it, whatever. So, whereas like SAS is a little bit more, I think, designer friendly for just to make cool stuff and get around with it. So, I don't know.
It feels like there are certain things out there that are meant to make it seem like your process is going to be improved when it just complicates it 10 times more.
Yeah.
And that I don't know what that is, but it sounds like something that would just complicate everything.
Right, yeah.
I think it depends on the person, too. Like, Haml is probably awesome for some people. It sounds like it was horrible for you, but, like, not everything. We just have all these little, like, different paths we can go down. Yeah. It's kind of like we're all doing the same thing, but we're not. I don't know. I'm not sure I like that.
Yeah, it's like everyone create a wheel.
Yeah.
And then we'll just compare them at the end of the day. And then we'll see who wins. So
it makes me wonder how people learn web design from scratch anymore. I'm like, you know, you can't even, half the time you can't even view source with everything minimized or, you know, if and even sometimes the CSS that like SAS spits out, depending on how people have things set up, sometimes it's like scary. You're like, I hope no one's using this as how to learn how to write actual CSS.
Right. Well, like when we started out, like the view source button was like one level deep, right? Now it's like two or three, or it's like even hidden off, or you have to, I think I had to install a developer. Like, you know,
I think you have to turn it on in browsers now, don't you?
Yeah. So it's kind of hard to like, you know, snare people in, if you will, some of that. So, but this is a question for Sam then. This is like, you know, you teach web design and what do you think?
I would say a lot of students, I'll show them pretty soon after they start how to view source. I mean, just a quick option command U, and they're able to see that depending on what browser they're using. A lot of them, they used to be a little scared of inspect elements, but now they love it. And they're now finding things that are involving all of these other languages that may manipulate your HTML and CSS and say, oh, if I just put that in, it'll work, right? And I'm like, well, that's linked to this JavaScript that's making those class names change, or it's adding, you know, something like Modernizer, where it's just adding all those class names in of whatever it's detecting on that browser. So they're understanding, they have a better understanding now of it, that what you see isn't necessarily what was typed out.
Yeah.
So at least they're starting to embrace inspect element a lot more, and they understand that, and then they're just curious to want to know something that's way down the road when we're still working on, you know, classes and IDs. But
do you teach them things like using SAS and other preprocessor type stuff, or do you just have them write straight up, as we're saying, the vanilla CSS and HTML?
Yeah, right now they are all vanilla HTML and CSS, just because we are primarily a print program, and we just happen to have web classes within it. I would love for there to be a SAS class and even a JavaScript for designers class. I know my coworker and I are working on writing that, but it doesn't exist yet. But it'd be nice down the road.
I think it's good that, I mean, I don't know. I always sort of worry about people coming into this new. I'm like, what if you only learn SAS and you never, I mean, you could learn how to do stuff in SAS and never actually know how to write straight up CSS. Yeah. I don't know if that's good. I mean, maybe it's totally fine and I'm just like being a bitter old person to think that's bad, but.
Well, the way that it's structured here, they have to take two classes in web before they can do the mobile class or any of the special topics that we come up with. So they'd have to learn the vanilla first before they can get to the rocky road or fancier.
I like that you extended the ice cream metaphor.
I feel like rocky road was the first thing that came to mind. I mean, whatever that isn't vanilla.
Yeah, just adding a little chocolate chip or something.
I don't know. That's what SAS is. It's the chocolate chip.
Yeah.
But I mean, they should be able to, I think anybody coming into it now should be able to or should learn it from scratch so that they are better at also troubleshooting if anything goes wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's easier to do when you know what you've written.
Yeah, definitely. That's the first place that'll trip you up, isn't it? It's like once all those layers of items, like something messes up or crosses paths or overwrites something, if you don't know what's actually being written, you're never going to find it.
Yeah.
Or you'll just drive yourself crazy.
Or you'll just email me and I'll help you find it.
Yeah, that's probably what happens.
Cool. Well, I think it's a good time to kind of slowly wrap things up. But one question we always ask is like, what things are you passionate about right now, or like you're really interested in right now in terms of the web space?
In the what space?
In the web space.
Oh.
Or it could be anything else.
I'm really interested to see what's going to happen out of just kind of, what's the best way to phrase this? Well, there's this kind of, I guess, overarching opinion last year of like the web has gotten boring and it's soulless and everything else.
Really?
I'm really interested to see what's going to happen with the backlash of that, of how we're going to get back more to playing on the web. And I'm all completely into encouraging people to like play with these, you know, CSS and JavaScript and stuff that we maybe considered to be very serious, like work tools, and just like go make something fun with it. Like have fun with what we do. And I'm kind of hoping that's going to come up a little more. I've been really excited to see a lot of the experimenting going on in some places like CodePen and even some stuff we find on CreativeJS and that kind of thing of people really taking these things and making it more playful and not such a, you know, just not making like the same website over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm pretty excited about that. And I guess it's not web stuff, but I've also been pretty excited about the more digital art projects I've gotten to work on lately. That's all kind of been as part of web things. I recently got to like design a font all entirely in like programming commands. So that was pretty darn fun. And it's getting projected as part of a digital fireworks show, like the size of a building. So,
nice.
I mean, technically that's still kind of on screen, but I'm like, that's amazing.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty excited about stuff like that, that just all this web stuff. You know, it's all stuff I've learned by doing things for the web that has been able to translate to things that are maybe, I don't know if it's really more permanent, but it feels just like, feels different than a screen, even if it essentially still is a screen.
Right.
So I'm pretty excited about that.
Cool. Awesome. And Kat, I wish I had time. Like if I had time, I would probably just dive into processing JS or processing and just do more video art and like and maybe learn what Ustream is. I'm not sure. And then I find that really is fascinating because I feel like that's where like a lot of art is going. Like modern art, if you will, and some of that. So
and it's really fun stuff.
Yeah, that's really cool. So how can people find you on the internet, on the web and whatnot?
Oh, it's all pretty similar. You can find me on Twitter at VLH. It's my initials. I'm on Twitter all the time. Valhead.com is my site. And yeah, I guess between the two of those, you can pretty much get in touch with me anyway, any possible method. But definitely the Twitters is a pretty popular one.
Cool. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for being on our show.
Thanks for having me.
Cool. Until next time.
All right. Bye, guys.
Bye.